Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Radio Havana, Cuba, and Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. We'll begin with NHK World Radio Japan. In Myanmar, pro-democracy demonstrations are growing while military oppression is becoming more violent. The NLD is the ruling political party, and their headquarters was raided. The military claims that there was fraud in the election, while some military and police are joining the mostly youthful protesters. World Health Organization medical experts have completed their investigation in Wuhan, China, to see if COVID originated there. They dispelled the notion that the virus leaked from the local laboratory. China says that the U.S. should allow the World Health Organization to carry out origin tracing studies in the U.S. Biden expects extreme competition with China, but says he knows President Xi very well and understands him. President Xi has offered the COVID vaccine to Eastern European countries, along with agricultural trade. Iran is blocked from Western vaccines by U.S. sanctions and has begun using a Russian-made Sputnik V. Technologies are being advanced to create digital vaccine passes to allow travel. Japan has developed thermal power plants burning ammonia, which does not emit carbon when burned. NHK Japan.
To Myanmar, where demonstrations against the military takeover are growing despite a violent crackdown. Massive protests have continued for 5 straight days in several cities. Government workers were among those who took to the streets in the capital in defiance of a ban on large gatherings. They called for the release of the country's ousted leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. On Tuesday, police fired water cannon and rubber bullets at demonstrators in Naypyidaw. Local media say 2 people were injured, including a woman who is now in a coma after suffering a gunshot wound to the head. The United Nations issued a statement calling on authorities to respect human rights and fundamental freedoms. It also urged military leaders to adhere to democratic norms and resolve any differences through dialogue. A U.S. State Department spokesperson said Washington strongly condemns the violence.
We repeat our calls for the military to relinquish power, restore democratically elected government, release those detained, and lift all telecommunication restrictions and to refrain from violence.
Meanwhile, sources close to Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy say security forces raided their party headquarters in Yangon Tuesday night. They say documents and money were taken. No one was in the headquarters at the time. One NLD member describes the raid as unlawful.
According to the security camera footage, around 9 p.m., the military raided our headquarters and broke the lock. The witnesses mentioned that soldiers went inside the office with lights. The NLD party is still the ruling party in an elected government chosen by the people. We are the biggest political party in Myanmar. They obviously violated the laws.
The military claims there was fraud in the November general election, which the NLD won by a landslide. But the country's election commission had said there were no major irregularities.
Government officials and police officers in Myanmar are taking part in protests against the February 1st coup. The military has responded by warning it'll punish anyone urging people to join the rallies. In the eastern state of Kaya, about 50 uniformed police refused to perform their duties and staged a protest. They held a banner reading, "We oppose the military's dictatorship," and chanted pro-democracy slogans. A group of civil servants leading the demonstrations says more than half the officials of at least five ministries, including the Electricity and Energy Ministry and the Construction Ministry, are taking part. The military said it will identify people calling on civil servants to participate in protests and punish them strictly in accordance with the law.
Experts from the World Health Organization are wrapping up their visit to Wuhan. They were in the Chinese city to probe the origins of the coronavirus, which has now infected over 106 million people. The WHO team and Chinese authorities spoke to reporters on Tuesday. The Chinese side repeated earlier claims the virus could have emerged in another region.
Retrospective research for potential earlier cases in cities including Wuhan in the 2 months prior to the outbreak in December 2019 has not revealed clear evidence of the occurrence of clinical cases of SARS-CoV-2 infection.
The WHO team leader said their findings suggest it's unlikely the virus leaked from a local laboratory.
And of course, we can continue exploring the potential that the early cases have, but a lot has already been done in trying to extract all the information that we could extract from these early cases in December 2019.
The experts were able to visit the Wuhan Institute of Virology and interview officials there. The institute is known for its research into bat coronaviruses. The Trump administration claimed the virus might have leaked from the facility. The WHO team began its investigation on January 29th. The experts also visited a seafood market where many people contracted the virus during the initial outbreak. The market is still fenced off. It was closed to foreign media after being shut down in January last year. The WHO said approval from Chinese authorities was needed to visit particular locations or arrange interviews. It said the team spent much of the time visiting facilities chosen by the government. They included an exhibition showcasing the Communist Party's success in containing the outbreak. Now, while the team's work in Wuhan has finished, the WHO is expected to continue researching the origin of the virus.
China says the United States should follow its lead and accept a probe by a World Health Organization team studying the origins of the coronavirus. WHO experts have wrapped up their visit to the Chinese city of Wuhan. They say their findings suggest it's unlikely the virus leaked from a local lab. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin said the Chinese government has provided strong support and assistance for the investigation as part of global efforts to find where the virus started. Wang said a number of reports and studies indicate the outbreak began in multiple locations around the world, including the U.S., before the virus started spreading in Wuhan.
We hope the U.S. side will adopt the same open and transparent attitude as China and invite WHO experts to carry out origin tracing studies in the United States.
Washington says it will review the WHO study.
Turning to tensions between the U.S. and China, President Joe Biden expects extreme competition with Beijing, but says he won't take the same approach as his predecessor, Donald Trump. He made the remarks in an interview with U.S. media on Sunday. Biden said he's not spoken to Chinese President Xi Jinping since taking office, but added there's no reason not to call him. Biden said that when he was vice president, he probably spent more time with President Xi than with any other world leader. Describing Xi as very bright and very tough, Biden said he knows the Chinese leader pretty well. Biden said the U.S. and China can avoid conflict, but competition between them would be extreme. Biden's administration appears willing to work with China on climate change and other issues, but it seems ready to take a tough line on areas such as diplomacy, security, trade, and human rights. China's president says he will consider supplying a Chinese-developed coronavirus vaccine to Central and Eastern European countries. Xi Jinping made a comment on Tuesday during a video link meeting with leaders from 17 countries in the region. In a keynote speech to the so-called China CEEC summit, the president said Serbia has already received 1 million doses of coronavirus vaccine from a Chinese company. He added that Hungarian and Chinese companies are cooperating on vaccine development. Observers say Beijing may be seeking to take advantage of a delay in the EU's vaccine rollout as it aims to strengthen ties with Central and Eastern European countries. Xi also mentioned agricultural trade. He said China intends to double its imports from the region over the next 5 years. Xi said his country also intends to raise two-way farm trade by 50% during the time frame. Economic ties between the two sides are taking place through China's Belt and Road Initiative.
Vaccinations are now underway in Iran, the country with the highest coronavirus death toll in the Middle East. People are getting a Russian-made vaccine as imports from the United States are banned. Medical workers were the first to get the jab. Inoculation started on Tuesday in the capital, Tehran. The Sputnik V vaccine was developed by Russia and imported earlier this month. Iran is trying to develop its own while also acquiring them from Russia and China. The country's confrontation with the U.S. has created challenges for people's lives for some time. It's also complicating efforts to protect the public from the coronavirus.
Developers are exploring technology that could make it easier to travel again. They're working on digital passes to show whether travelers have been vaccinated against COVID-19 or have had a negative test. But privacy experts worry about where the information might go. NHK World's Catherine Kobayashi reports.
Travelers already cart more than their fair share of luggage, their passports, and their boarding passes. Now many of them need one of these, too.
This is a way for people to get back to our new normal in a safe way.
Technology companies, airlines, and nonprofits are all developing vaccine passports, digital proof of vaccinations, or a negative COVID test. Travelers pull up the documents on their smartphones just as they do with boarding passes. Danish leaders say they'll introduce one within a few months. Our society needs to move forward, says the acting finance minister, Morten Bødskov, and the business community needs to travel. For decades, visitors to some countries have had to prove they've been vaccinated against diseases such as yellow fever. But some worry about sharing health information over digital devices, and they're concerned travel could be more difficult for those who don't have smartphones.
The right thing to do is to, you know, make sure that people come forward, be vaccinated because they want to, rather than it being made in some way mandatory through a passport.
Those developing the technology insist vaccine passports are in our future, but they have some questions.
How should it be regulated? What limits should be placed on it? What are the boundaries of social acceptability?
The developers say their technology may have uses beyond travel. They say going forward, some aspects of our life may only be open to those who can prove they've had their shots. Catherine Kobayashi, NHK World, New York.
Japan's government and corporate sector have drawn up plans to use ammonia as a fuel for thermal power plants. Ammonia does not emit carbon dioxide when burnt. The government considers it a next-generation fuel along with hydrogen in its efforts to reduce CO2 emissions. Officials of the industry ministry, electric power companies, and machinery makers compiled the plans on Monday. They call for using 3 million tons of ammonia a year in 2030 by developing technology for burning the fuel together with coal. They also plan to raise the use of ammonia to 30 million tons a year by 2050. That would be achieved through alliance on power plants that only burn ammonia. In a related development, Japanese power company JERA has exchanged memorandums with Malaysian oil and gas giant Petronas to produce the fuel. JERA is a joint venture between Tokyo Electric Power and Chubu Electric Power. It's Japan's largest thermal power generation company. The firm is planning to reduce the CO2 emission of its operations to virtually zero by 2050 by relying on ammonia and hydrogen.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 8:30 to 9 p.m. at 6155-7245 and 7445, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. The presidential election in Ecuador will see a runoff in 2 months, with the leftist candidate André Arauz far ahead of the second-place candidate. Despite pleas from Amnesty International, the ACLU, and Reporters Without Borders, the Biden administration will continue to seek the extradition of Julian Assange from the UK. U.S. human rights groups released a report finding that U.S. border agents systematically ignore and dismiss reports of missing migrants and obstruct efforts by families and humanitarian groups to find them. Fossil fuel pollution was responsible for 8.7 million deaths in 2018. State-owned fossil fuel companies plan to invest $1.9 trillion over the next decade in projects making the Paris Agreement goals impossible. Every winter in London, many die from rough sleeping. But the pandemic has led to finding housing for the homeless and giving them vaccinations. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The president of the National Electoral Council of Ecuador, the CNE, Diana Atamait, reported on the details of the quick count of the general elections, which gave first place to the candidate of the Unión por la Esperanza, the UNES, Andrés Arauz. Coming in second place is the presidential candidate for the Plurinational Unity Movement, Pachakutik, Yaku Pérez. The CNE president said the electoral process in Ecuador was, quote, transparent and clean. With 97.38% of the ballots counted, both candidates obtained the majority of votes according to data from the Electoral Council. Arauz captured 32.31% of the valid votes, while Pérez garnered 19.76%. As none of the candidates obtained 40% of the votes, Arauz and Pérez will face each other in the runoff election on April the 11th. U.S. President Joe Biden's administration will continue to seek the extradition of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange from the United Kingdom to the United States, a U.S. Department of Justice official said. Spokesman Mark Raimondi said that Washington would continue to challenge a British judge's ruling last month that Assange should not be extradited to the U.S. because he is at risk of taking his own life. District Judge Vanessa Barraister said in her January 4th decision that Assange's, quote, mental condition is such that it would be oppressive to extradite him to the United States of America. The judge set Friday as a deadline for the U.S. to appeal her ruling. Quote, we continue to seek his extradition, Raimondi told reporters. His comment comes a day after nearly two dozen civil liberty, human rights, and press freedom groups signed an open letter urging the U.S. Justice Department to forego the appeal and drop the underlying indictment against Assange. The WikiLeaks founder is facing 17 espionage charges and one charge of computer misuse, which carry a maximum sentence of 175 years in prison. Quote, the indictment of Mr. Assange threatens press freedom because much of the conduct described in the indictment is conduct that journalists engage in routinely and that they must engage in order to do the work the public needs them to do, said the groups, which included Amnesty International USA, the American Civil Liberties Union, and Reporters Without Borders.
A newly released report by the groups No More Deaths and Coalición de Derechos Humanos finds that U.S. Border Patrol agents systematically ignore and dismiss reports of missing migrants and obstruct efforts by families and humanitarian groups to assist or find migrants in the harsh Arizona desert. Parker Dangan, who works with No More Deaths and is one of the authors of the report, said, quote, "The agency's systematic neglect towards emergency reports of undocumented people in distress constitutes a state crime of historic proportions. Therefore, we don't advocate for the improvement, expansion, or reform of Border Patrol's supposed humanitarian initiatives. Instead, we call for an immediate end to Border Patrol's role as sole or primary responder to reported emergencies in the borderlands." The group Humane Borders found 2020 was the deadliest year for migrants crossing the border into Arizona at non-official ports of entry. The group says the remains of 227 migrants were found on the border last year.
A new report finds fossil fuel pollution was responsible for 8.7 million, or 1 in 5, global deaths in 2018, far higher than previously thought. The study conducted by Harvard and other universities found regions with the highest concentrations of particulate matter from fossil fuels had the worst mortality rates and include China and India, as well as Eastern North America and Europe. In related news, a report released this week by the Natural Resource Governance Institute says state-owned fossil fuel companies plan to invest $1.9 trillion over the next decade in projects that would make it impossible to meet the Paris Climate Agreement goals.
In London, every winter there's a spike in unavoidable deaths among rough sleepers as temperatures plummet. And observers say that this year could be catastrophic, with more people sleeping rough than ever before. Reports say there was a staggering 118% increase in new referrals of young people from April to August 2020 compared with the same period in 2019. The reasons being unemployment, rent arrears, financial instability and evictions. Before the pandemic hit, the British government had made an election manifesto commitment to end rough sleeping by March 2024. But the, quote, Everyone In campaign the government's Communities, Housing and Local Government Department launched after the pandemic first hit, immediately housing nearly 30,000 people, has proven the problem can be solved much sooner if the will is there. And in related news, in a UK first, homeless people have been made a priority for the COVID-19 jabs after Oldham Council in Manchester took matters into its own hands and vaccinated its rough sleepers alongside those over 80. GPs say with a life expectancy of just 43 to 45, homeless people are an extremely vulnerable group and in need of protection. The highly infectious new strain of COVID-19 and the cold weather makes this the most dangerous time for those without a home.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working pretty well at radiohc.cu, though the podcasts have not always been updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. We will conclude with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Brief headlines from Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Iran. Then global COVID updates, and the U.S. will re-engage with the U.N. Human Rights Council. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
One of Saudi Arabia's most vocal women's rights activists has been released from prison. Lujain Al-Hatloul was arrested in 2018, allegedly for violating counterterrorism laws, charges that critics described as politically motivated. She openly advocated for the right of women to drive and for an end to the country's restrictive male guardianship system.
Turkey has unveiled an ambitious 10-year plan for its new space agency, including missions to the moon, satellite systems, and launching Turkish astronauts into space. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said the program would aim to land a spacecraft on the moon by 2023. Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei has said the country will only return to the 2015 nuclear deal if the U.S. lifts sanctions. But the U.S. says it won't lift sanctions just to get Iran back to the negotiating table. The deal limited Iran's uranium enrichment capacity to make it harder for Tehran to develop nuclear weapons. The European Union has finalized a deal with BioNTech and Pfizer for an additional 300 million doses of their COVID-19 vaccine. The EU has faced heavy criticism for the slow rollout of its vaccination program. Russia has issued updated statistics on coronavirus-linked deaths last year. More than 162,000 people died with COVID-19 last year, far higher than previously reported. And Germany's seven-day incidence rate is at its lowest in 3 months. Federal and state leaders will meet on Wednesday to review Germany's current lockdown measures, which are set to expire next Sunday.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel says that she wants to extend the country's current coronavirus lockdown until March. Her government will meet with the leaders of Germany's 16 states tomorrow to decide on the shutdown. Greece's prime minister has announced a full lockdown for the capital Athens to slow a surge in COVID-19 cases. Beginning Thursday, schools and all non-essential shops will be required to close.
Two new COVID-19 variants have been identified in England, one of them deemed a variant of concern. UK government advisers say both have similarities to the South African and Brazilian variants. And South Korea says it will greenlight the AstraZeneca vaccine for all people, including those over the age of 65. It's the first vaccine to be granted approval in the country.
German vaccine maker BioNTech has started production at a new facility in western Germany. The factory, based in the city of Marburg, is expected to boost the EU's COVID-19 vaccine supply and will produce the main ingredient of the drug developed with US pharmaceutical company Pfizer. Security forces in Israel have clashed with hundreds of ultra-Orthodox Jews protesting against lockdown restrictions. Police used water cannon to disperse the crowd. Public anger against the ultra-Orthodox community is building as they've continued to hold large weddings and funerals.
South Africa has suspended its rollout of the Oxford AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine. A small clinical trial suggested the vaccine offered only minimal protection against the new COVID variant present in the country. Authorities say they will offer vaccines by Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer in the coming weeks.
The United States has announced it will re-engage with the UN Human Rights Council. The Trump administration withdrew from the group 3 years ago, citing what it said was unfair targeting of Israel. U.S. envoy Mark Casser said his country would return as an observer and seek re-election as a full member.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website, along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.